So many times we have Bible stories that we've read over and over and over, and we really miss the significance of them in a lot of places because we're so familiar with them. We're kicking off a new sermon series this morning entitled Waterfront Property. I believe that we are a blessed people, not only that we get to be Americans, I believe that we're blessed that we get to be Oklahomans, and I believe that we are blessed here in Marshall County that we get to live at the water's edge. You know, things are just different when they happen at the water's edge. Things cost more at the water's edge, and the fact is there's a lot of the miracles and things that happen in the scriptures that are centered around or built around or near to water, and so many times we take those for granted. For Christy and I, as you can imagine, for me, I like to watch college football, or I like to watch Major League Baseball. I watch a little pro football, not a whole lot basketball. But as you can imagine, most of my television viewing at home is done on one particular channel. But I do have a couple of other shows that I really enjoy. Now, I've told you before, I'm a Survivor fan. I'm a week behind. So if you watch Survivor last week, don't tell me what happened. I've got it recorded. I'll watch it maybe this afternoon or this evening sometime and get caught back up. But there's another show that Christy and I got started watching. It's called Caribbean Life. Anybody watch Caribbean Life? Oh, I love it. Now they've got a Bahamas Life, and they've got a Mexico Life, and they've just got all of these places. And what happens is they take a couple from somewhere else in the world that wants to move and buy a home in the Caribbean for the Caribbean Life. And so they do all of these. They usually show them three or four different houses, and they always ask people, what is it you want? I get a kick out of it because they ask them what they want, and everybody wants the same thing. They want an open floor concept. They want it to have two or three bedrooms with three or four bathrooms. They want to be able to have all of these amenities, and they'd like to do it all for $99.95. It's always amazing at how they do, but it's amazing how many of them that say one of their non-negotiables is we want to be on the water. And then they start looking at houses and they decide, well, if we could be close to the beach would be good. And then it's amazing how many of them eventually end up that they go, hey, if we could just have a view of the water, we'll move back away from there. Because the closer to the water you are, the more expensive things are. I would tell you this, when you Google waterfront property, it is spectacular at the homes people build at the edge of the water all over the world. And I think for us, we're a blessed people that God sends people to Texoma in droves. We've got a special group with us this morning. All of my guys back there are all of the guys from Elmore City, Purnell. All of you Badgers, stand up back there this morning. That's a good crew back there. It's great to have you guys with us. Quentin, wave your hand back there. Quentin Magruder, he's the youth pastor there at First Baptist in Elmore City, and he is one of my youth from First Baptist Ardmore, and it's great to have you guys. I'm glad you're here this morning, but the reason they're here with us is because they had a retreat at the lake this weekend. It just works that way. Water just draws people, and we're going to look at a story this morning in the scriptures, and then over the next 5 weeks, we're going to look at some places in the scriptures where God does some great things around the water, and so I wanted you to get to see that video because we are going to read a story this morning that most of us just read and we don't think about it, but stop and think about how many fish you got to catch to sink a boat. We read the story and we just go, well, yeah, that's how the story was. That's what happened. But you stop and think about how many fish you got to catch to sink a boat. Luke chapter 5, as you're turning there, you'll probably look. This may be the strangest sermon title I have ever given in all of my days. I would pronounce it Poid Walden Fack. Poid Walden Fack. Some of you are probably thinking, what in the world is that? I'll explain it to you in just a little bit. Luke chapter 5, it says this, as the crowd was pressing in on Jesus to hear God's word, he was standing by Lake Gennesaret. That's the Sea of Galilee. He saw two boats at the edge of the lake, and the fishermen left them and were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, which belonged to Simon, and he asked him to put out a little from the land. Then he sat down and was teaching the crowds from the boat. When he had finished speaking, Jesus said to Simon, "Put out into deep water and let down your nets for a catch." Master Simon replied, "We've worked hard all night long and caught nothing, but at your word, I'll let down the nets." When they did this, they caught a great number of fish, and their nets began to tear. So they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them, and they came and filled the boats so full that they began to sink. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me, because I'm a sinful man, Lord." For he and all those with him were amazed at the catch of fish they took, and so were James and John, Zebedee's sons, who were Simon's partners. "Don't be afraid," Jesus told Simon. "From now on, you will be catching people." Then they brought the boats to land, left everything, and followed him. One of my favorite stories in all the scriptures. Part of that is because it just involves Peter. And this is kind of the first time that we see Peter come onto the pages of the scriptures. And then we know all of the things that God does with Peter throughout his life. And even after Jesus leaves and goes back to heaven, all the things he does. And this is kind of our introduction to Peter. It's one of my favorite, with Peter being my favorite character in all of the scriptures. But as you get to read the whole story, it's amazing at the little places, just the little nuggets that are in this story. And so I'd like us to walk through verse by verse this morning and get to look at several of them. The first of them is in verses 1 through 3. I just read it to you again real quick. It says, "As the crowd was pressing in on Jesus to hear God's word, he was standing by Lake Gennesaret. He saw two boats at the edge of the lake, and the fishermen had left them and were washing their nets. He got into one of the boats, which belonged to Simon, and asked him to put out a little from the land. Then Jesus sat down and was teaching the crowds from the boat." You see, the first thing I want you to know this morning about Simon Peter is that Simon was with Jesus, but he was not washing nets. When you think about leaders, Simon being a leader, Simon being the guy that was the boss, Simon being a guy that even once he became one of the disciples, became a leader of the disciples and a leader of the first century church, Simon was just a leader all of his life. And one of the things that we know is if you're going to be a leader, or if you are a leader, or where you are a leader, you got to do the things as a leader you expect other people to do. No one wants to follow somebody who only wants to delegate but not do any of the work. I think it's interesting that it says the fishermen were off mending nets. They were washing the nets and they were getting ready to clean everything up so it didn't smell so that they could fish again tomorrow. But yet Peter was the boss, and what was Peter doing? He wasn't washing nets. He was hanging out with Jesus. You see, most of us have this idea of Peter that if he was going to be the leader, he should have been washing nets. Well, that's true if that's what you want your people to be doing. But I want you to stop and think with me for just a second. What if what Peter wanted his people to be doing was not washing nets, but sitting with Jesus? What if what Peter really wanted to be an example of was that you stay close to Jesus? So many times we would knock Peter and go, "Hey, you're the leader, but you're not washing nets. You're hanging out over here." My question is, what was Peter's motivation? I think Peter was a guy who understood the importance of being where Jesus was. He understood proximity. I think when we talk about real estate, we all know the three most important things about real estate are what? Location, location, location. We know that, right? I would tell you that that's true of real estate, but I would also tell you that that's true of people. The real key for us is not how much we have, or who our kids are, or what we do. The real key for each one of us in life is our location. How close are you to Jesus? What's your proximity to the Messiah? You see, that's the reason we do church every week. It's so that we can help you get closer, so that we can encourage you to get closer, so that we can encourage you to be more like, so that we can remind you it's location, location, location. Peter got it. Simon was with Jesus, but he wasn't washing nets. He was just staying close to the Messiah. Look at verses 4 and 5. It says, "When Jesus had finished speaking, he said to Simon, 'Put out in the deep water and let down your nets for a catch.' Master," Simon replied, "'We've worked hard all night long and caught nothing. But at your word, I'll let down the nets.'" You see, not only was Simon with Jesus and he wasn't washing the nets, but Simon knew the facts, but he trusted Jesus. What did Simon do for a living? Simon was a fisherman. More than likely, that's what Simon's dad did. He was a fisherman. That's what his friends did. James and John, they were fishermen. He knew about fishing, and he knew that you catch fish at night, not during the day. Because as the sun heats up, the water gets hotter on the top, and the fish get down deeper where it's cold. And they didn't fish with lures like we do. They fish with nets. They got to scrape the top of the water. So as the water gets warm, the fish get deep. No matter how you scrape the water, there's no fish there. Simon Peter trusted. He knew the facts, but he trusted Jesus. You see, I think Jesus' lesson plan for Simon Peter was this. Give him some information. And then teach him how to apply that application. And then I think Jesus' lesson plan was transformation. I think Jesus' lesson plan for Simon Peter was information, application, and transformation. The truth is, you can't miss any of those steps. If you miss the information, the application won't work. If you get the information and the application, but it doesn't transform your life, it's unimportant. It's immaterial. You got to get all of the steps in, or it throws the whole system off. For us, we kind of have a 20th century lesson plan in the church, and it's information. We show up every week, and we expect the preacher or our Sunday school teacher or the youth pastor or the children's pastor or somebody to give us some information, and hopefully it's new information that we haven't heard before. And then we think the goal is to listen to that information and be able, when it's all over, to be able to repeat that information back. And that's just not the objective. The objective is not listen and get information and be able to repeat it back. Now, that's the lesson plan we often operate off of in the 21st century. But I think Jesus' lesson plan was information, application. You got to apply what you learn. And when you do, it will transform your life. I think that's the lesson plan God wants us to operate off of today. I think you should show up every Sunday expecting to hear from God. And then I think we should take that and apply it in some way to our life. Go and do something with it. And when we do and we're obedient, God over time begins to transform our lives into people that we would have never thought we could become. More like Jesus. I think that was Jesus' lesson plan. I think the same lesson plan he had for Peter is the same lesson plan he has for us today. Information, application, transformation. But now Jesus' lesson topic would be different. A lot of times we might think Jesus might preach a sermon that the topic of it would be kind to one another or stay close to me or how to be happy in the first century. But I think Jesus' lesson topic was trust and faith. Trust and obey. You see, Simon knew the facts about fishing. He knew this wasn't the time of day to be fishing. And Jesus said, hey, go out and cast your nets into the deep. I think Jesus' topic is, are you going to listen to what I say? Are you going to take the information I give you and apply it? Are you going to do what I tell you to do? And if so, I'll do something that will transform your life that you'll never again forget, all of your life. I think when Jesus was teaching him about trust and faith, Jesus was giving him the idea that, do you trust me enough to listen? And do you have enough faith to take action? I think that's the same question Jesus asks us today. I think it's the same question Jesus asks us every Sunday. I think it's the same question Jesus asks us every time we read the Bible or spend any time in prayer. Do you have enough faith to trust what I tell you? And do you have enough faith to put into action what I show you? You see, the fact is, Jesus has a plan for your life. Jesus has a plan for your life. Jesus has a plan for my life. And the plan for my life in some ways is exactly the same as yours. And in other ways, it's totally different. Yours is exclusive just to you. But Jesus has a plan for each one of our lives. I want you to know this. The plan that Jesus has for you is the best plan for your life. The plan that Jesus has for me is the best plan for my life. The plan that he had for Peter is the best plan for Peter's life. The only thing is, Jesus wanted him to know, I have a plan for you. It's the best plan for you, but it's not to fish for fish. You see, at this point in life, Peter thought, hey, my dad was a fisherman. My granddad was a fisherman. I'm going to be a fisherman, which is true. That's what Jesus wanted him to do. He had brought him up in a place where he understood about fishing. It's just that Jesus was going to make a left turn on him here and say, hey, I don't want you to fish for me, for fish. I want you to fish for men. And when Peter was obedient, it absolutely transformed his life. Now, I want you to catch one other thing in these verses I think are significant. In verse 5, when Jesus said, put out into the deep and let down your nets for a catch, in verse 5, it says, Master Simon replied, we've worked hard all night long and caught nothing, but at your word I'll let down the nets. Now, anybody who learns other languages will tell you possibly the hardest language to learn in all of the world is English. And the reason for that is not only do we have so many cliches that are hard to understand, but you can totally change the meaning of a sentence or a phrase or what you say simply by changing the inflection in your voice. You with me? I wonder when Peter said that, how he said it. I wonder if he said, we worked hard all night and we caught nothing. But at your word, I'll let down the nets. I wonder if that's how he said it. Or I wonder instead of focusing on the weave, he focused on the your and the I'll. I wonder instead of saying, we've worked hard all night and we've caught nothing, but at your word, I'll let down the nets. I wonder if he said, we've worked hard all night and we've caught nothing, but at your word, I'll let down the nets. You see, it totally changes everything, just the inflection, even though the phrases and the words are exactly the same. It changes everything based on the inflection of his voice. I think Peter said it. Most of us typically think negative of Peter when we read things, and we automatically lean to the negative side to think that he said it in a negative way because of some of the other stories we know. But I think Peter said right here, we've worked hard all night long and caught nothing. But at your word, I'll let down the nets. You know the reason that I think that? It's not just because Peter's my favorite and I want to think good of him and be optimistic. But I think the reason that I think that is because of the first word in verse 5. You see, the key is not we've worked hard all night long and caught nothing, but at your word, I'll let down the nets. The key is where he started the phrase, and it was this, Master. You see, when he says master, that changes everything else after that, if that's true. So many of us say master, but I don't know if that's true or not. If you gauged by our actions, you wouldn't buy into that fact. But I think for Peter, when he says master, I think that's the key. For us to make Jesus the master of our life and to operate that way, that our words and our actions match up in the things we do. Not only was Simon with Jesus and not washing nets, and Simon knew the facts, but he trusted Jesus, but Simon followed directions and other people benefited. Look at verses 6 and 7. It says, when they did this, they caught a great number of fish and their nets began to tear, so they signaled to their partners in the other boat to come and help them. They came and filled both boats so full that they began to sink. The fact is, they all participated and they all got to be a part of it, but somebody had the lead. Look back up in verse 5. What did Peter say? We have fished all night and we haven't caught squat, but I'll let down the nets. Can I tell you this? God's plan for your life is to be where you are, where you work, where you do your hobbies, where you live in the neighborhood, what class you're in. Hey, I want you students to know this. It's not chance that you have math third hour, or that you have math fifth hour, or that you have science first hour, or that you have athletics sixth hour, or you have band the hour that you have a band. It's the same for you adults. It's not a coincidence that you live and work and do what you do. God has put you there for a purpose. Now lead. But most of us sit back and go, we haven't caught anything and we don't know what to do. Peter said, we hadn't caught anything, but I will let down the nets. And when Peter took the initiative to let down the nets, look at those verses again. If we just read them with a little different emphasis. Verses 6 and 7. When they, did this, they caught a great number of fish and their nets began to tear. So they signaled to their partners on the other boat to come and help them. They came and filled the boat so full that they began to sink. You see, when Peter was obedient, when Peter was willing to step out, regardless of what everybody else did and be a leader, other people followed. I'm just telling you, that's the way it works. We have a natural herd instinct that's built in us. On Friday, I spent the day working cows with Ian and Troy. And my job was to run them from the pens up into the line. As Deanna says, it was my job to run them up in the thingamajig. And then into the chute. And you know what's fascinating? In the little holding pen, they would just circle and circle and circle and circle until one of them would head up into the chute. And when one of them would head up into the chute, it was amazing how many of them would follow that one. You see, cows have a herd instinct, but I'm going to tell you, people have a herd instinct too. If one of us will lead, other people will follow. And the fact is, I don't got to lead and everybody follow. I just need to lead and the ones that will follow, follow. And then I need Tanya to lead, and the ones that will follow, follow. And then Rick lead, and the ones that will follow, follow. And Tim lead, and the ones that will follow, follow. And Eddie lead, and the ones that will follow. And Ron lead, and the ones that will follow. And Scott lead, and the ones that will follow. And Larry lead, and the ones that will follow. And eventually, not that everybody's following me, but everybody's following one of us, and we're following Jesus. But somebody's got to lead. Herd instinct just takes over. I want to ask you one question. In verse 7, it says, so they signaled their partners in the other boat to come and help them. They came and filled the boat so full that they began to sink. Let me ask you a question. What is that they? All of the others were talking about the other fishermen. Peter led and they got their boats and they got their nets and they began to catch fish. But when it says, then they filled the boats with so many fish that they began to sink, is that they people or they boats? They began to sink. Is it they the people began to sink or they the boats began to sink? The answer to that question is yes, it's both. You could read that sentence either way. The syntax of the sentence can be read either way with the pronoun they. They, the people, began to sink, or they, the boats, began to sink. And you would say, what difference does that make? Here's what I would tell you. When God does something great, it impacts everything. It impacts you as individuals. It impacts you as families. It impacts you as friends. It impacts us as a church. It impacts us as Christian brothers and sisters. It impacts our town. It impacts our school system. It impacts everything. When we will be faithful to lead and others follow, it impacts everything. You can't be in the boat and not get wet if it sinks. They, the boats, the people, sank. You see, I believe when God goes to work, it impacts everything. When Simon followed directions, when he followed God's lead, everybody benefited. Simon witnessed a miracle, and he saw himself. Look at this in verse 8. When Simon Peter saw this, he fell at Jesus' knees and said, "Go away from me because I'm a sinful man, Lord." Now, I got to tell you, just knowing Simon Peter and kind of knowing how I'm wired and kind of knowing how most of you are wired, if you were in the fishing business and you threw the nets out at any time of day, whether it was the right time of day, wrong time of day, you threw the nets out and you began to catch so many fish that it started sinking your boat and your buddy's boats. Most of us, our first thought would not, "Away from me, Lord, I'm a sinful man." Most of us would say, "I'm the greatest fisherman in the world. Get your pens and papers and take notes." Right? Isn't that what most of us would say? Most of us immediately, we would start thinking about how great we are. Most of us would say, "Hey, I am the greatest. Bring me more nets. Bring me more boats." But Peter didn't. You see, when God did something miraculous, Peter recognized it as a miracle. And Peter understood that he was just fortunate that God let him be a part of what he was doing, that God let him witness it. You see, I think when God shows up and God shows out, humility will take over, not ego and pride. I think if we allow ego and pride to take over and we take the credit, God will go, okay, let's see how you do. We have to be careful to give the glory where the glory goes. And Peter immediately steps up and says, go away from me. I'm so sinful. Me and you shouldn't be this close. Then verse 9 and 10 says, for he and all those with him were amazed. You see, I think when God does something great in our lives and great in our midst, I think even the bystanders will be amazed at what God does. But the key to that is one of us have to lead so that they'll follow. And then when God does something great in our midst, they're close enough they can witness it too for themselves. And then I don't have to tell them about it. They'll figure it out. Never once in the places where I've been and God's done something amazing have people come up and ask me to take photos and sign autographs. When God does something great, people will figure it out. We just got to get them close enough to see it. We just got to be willing to step out there and let them see it. They'll figure out it wasn't you. They'll figure out it wasn't me. They'll figure out it was a great thing. It was a miracle. God did it. And then they can't deny it because they witnessed it with their own two eyes. Simon witnessed a miracle, but what he saw was himself. He understood how great God was and how insignificant he was in the whole process. Verses 10b, the second part of verse 10. Jesus says, don't be afraid, Jesus told Simon. From now on, you'll be catching people. Jesus calmed him and Jesus gave him purpose. You would think after they caught that many fish that Jesus' first statement would have been, let's eat. But Jesus' first statement was, relax, calm down, don't be afraid. You see, when God does something great, it'll probably make us a little nervous. It might even make us a little fearful. I think it's interesting that Peter's first statements after the catch weren't about him. But when Jesus did something great, he knew that he needed to say to Peter, hey, relax, it's okay, I'm in control. Don't be afraid. You see, because all of us have a tendency to not want to get too close to God because we're afraid he might do something that scares us. He might ask you to do something that scares you. But the fact is, God's got a plan for you, and he's in control, and it's the best plan. Jesus calmed them and said, hey, don't be afraid. But I think one of the reasons that he said that is because he knew what he was just getting ready to say to Peter. He was fixing to change everything for Peter. Peter, relax. Listen to me. Peter, don't be afraid. Listen to me. I know you've thought your whole life you're going to be a fisherman of fish, but listen, don't be afraid. Don't be nervous. I'm going to tell you something big. I just need you to be faithful and obedient. Trust me. Listen, don't be afraid. Here it is. You are going to fish, but not for fish. Now, if Jesus said that to you, what would you think? We read the story and go, naturally, he says to him, I'm going to make you a fisher of men. But Peter didn't know that. When Jesus says to you, I want you to fish, but not for fish, that's when we all go, what else would you fish for? When he says, I don't want you to do this, I want you to do that. I don't want you to go here, I want you to go there. I want you to befriend them, and you don't understand why, but I got a plan. You just be faithful and befriend them. You just give to this ministry. You just serve in this place. You don't understand why. I'm just saying to you, give, serve, love. Now we all go, oh, yeah, that makes sense. That's a little nerve-wracking. I can understand why Jesus would say to him, don't be afraid. I got it. Relax. I'm in control. Then verse 11. It says, then they brought the boats to land and left everything and followed him. I've had an opportunity on two different occasions to go to Israel. And both times I've been there, we rode a boat out on the Sea of Galilee. And when you finish riding the boat, they bring you up to a museum, and they've got a little museum there, and they have a boat in this museum that it's rotted away. They found it. It was buried in the mud around Lake Galilee. And they have found it. It's amazing how well they have reconstructed it and put it back together. And they keep it in a room that's cordoned off, and they can control the humidity, and they can control the temperature and everything, because they don't want the wood to dry out. If it does, it'll rot. But they dug it out of the mud. When I was studying this week, I couldn't help but think. It says that they pulled the boats back up on the land and left the boat. And I couldn't help but think, how many fishermen just pull their boats up and walk off from them? I wonder if that boat I saw in the museum is that boat. Because probably not too many of them just pulled their boats up on the shore and walked off and left them. I wonder if the boat I saw in that museum is that boat. It says they left it. They just left it. Boats, nets, everything, and followed him. Let me ask you a question. What has your walk cost you? What have you left? So many times we worry about where God wants us to go. And I think sometimes the issue is not about where we need to go. It's about what we need to leave. We're always worried about where God wants us to go. My question to you this morning is what does God want you to leave? Stop. Let it go. It's in the past. Over and done. Remember, the lesson is information. Application. Transformation. It's when you're faithful that then God does a work that we all stand back and go, wow. The sermon title, Boyd Walden Fact, makes no sense unless you think of what Jesus said to Peter. Put out into deep water and let down your nets for a catch. If Peter didn't catch the for a catch, Peter would think Jesus was a nut. But Jesus told him, you just get out there and put your nets down for a catch. I already got the catch taken care of. I want you to know this. Whatever God's calling you to leave behind, God's got a plan for it. You think you can't get by without it, but you can. You can get by without it. Just leave it. Be faithful and move forward. And when you do, God will do miracles. And when he does, you and I will be transformed. Let's pray.